Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery. And that is why the Machinery Digest exists. A no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello, my friends, and welcome to this week's Idle Chatter podcast from the Farm Machinery Digest. I am your host, Ray Bohax, coming to you from Cat Swamp Road in Hackettstown, New Jersey, USA. Hopefully the sound of my voice is finding things going well today on your operation, and I know that in many parts of the world, North America here, we are getting ready to harvest, and some guys are already harvesting or have been through a harvest if they're doing wheat or something else. We are still in the midst of harvesting our fresh market sweet corn, but as I said last week, I did pre-record a few of these shows, so as I am recording this, we are in the midst of harvest, and probably by the time, I didn't extrapolate out when this show will air, since one comes out once a week, but I think this show will air the end of September, so we would probably still be harvesting or just finishing up and getting ready to put our cover crop in. And I'm doing the same five-way mix that I did last year. It's a King's Agri seed, and I get it from Lima Farms in Hillsborough, New Jersey. John Lima, he's got a farm operation there, and he is a seed dealer. And he is a King's Agri seed dealer. And I use there, I think it's called Soil Builder Plus. It is a five-way mix. It is triticale, or triticale, however you pronounce it, crimson clover, tillage radish, hairy vetch, and some deep-rooted ryegrass. So getting excited about moving to the next stage of farming, and I guess that's what it's all about here, right? In everybody's farm. 2019 was a challenge in many ways, and for most of us, but some people were blessed and did not have those challenges. We did here, not to the extent that everyone did in the Midwest, but we did have our own challenges here. And looking forward to 2020, looking forward to getting that cover crop in the ground, building my soil health, improving my tilth, and keeping all of those beneficial fungi and microorganisms and earthworms and everything happy under the ground. And I guess that's really part of farming, right? Being a good steward of what God has entrusted to us and not just looking to be profitable. But profitability is also sustainability, and I think that we often agriculture loses sight of that, is that we talk about the sustainable farm as far as the environment is concerned, and I know that everyone wants that because we live and breathe the same air. And what the city people don't realize is that we live on our farms, so we certainly don't want them polluted. But sustainability also means that it has to be profitable, otherwise there is going to be a housing development or a Walmart, and I don't think we need any more of those, or at least not here in New Jersey. We don't. But I have a interesting show, or I hope it's interesting. I think it's interesting, and I'm going to do my best to make it interesting because I honor the fact that you guys and gals are taking an hour of your time to listen to me. And some of you may be listening to me when you're in the combine harvesting. And hopefully, as you're listening and you glance over to that yield monitor, that you see some real big numbers that put a smile on your face. And that's always exciting. Looking at a yield monitor is akin to looking at a, if you dyno an engine, and looking at the dyno printout, or the dyno monitor, I should say. It all depends upon the dyno design you have. Lots of them will record the data, and you really can't tell until it's printed out. But a trained ear could tell when she's running sweet and making some power. But looking at a yield monitor is a lot like looking at that dyno readout, and you either get real happy or real sad. So hopefully, God willing, you are happy. And what I am going to discuss today is cold starting a diesel engine. And we're going to discuss glow plugs and intake air heaters. And that is going to be our topic today. We touched on this briefly, very briefly, probably about 10 or 12 or 14, 15 shows back. I honestly don't remember. I'd have to look in the archives. And but this is our 59th show, so which is actually our 60th show, which I know is confusing, but my first show was 00. And then we don't number them, but that was an introductory podcast. So this is the 59th full-blown podcast, then the 60th one up on the website. So if you have the opportunity, go to the farmmachinerydigest.com and look under Idle Chatter podcast host listing, and you will find all the archive shows along with it. I believe a lot of the other hosting networks archive them also. So wherever you get your podcast from, you should be more than be able to get back to podcast number one, which I believe was about the difference of octane and cetane. It's amazing how these weeks fly by when you're doing something like this, and it's how life flies by, right? I mean, we were late getting planted, and now we're talking about cover crops and getting plans for 2020. But we also have a reader. Actually, we have a letter from Mr. Joe Peters, and he's talking about, and that's going to be our special delivery segment, which closes the show, and that is brought to you by Firestone Ag, the company that was founded by Harvey Firestone. So Mr. Peters is asking about the use of modern oils in older gasoline engines, and I think that's a great question. I know in my other life working for writing for car magazines, and specifically my column in Hemmings Muscle Machines called Ask Ray, it seems to be an age-old question and never goes away about using modern oils in older engines. And also another question that probably is running neck and neck with it is using modern ethanol enhanced gasoline in older engines. But the oil question just seems to keep percolating up out of the ground like crude oil, right? When Jed Clampett shot into the ground on Beverly Hillbillies and the crude bubbled up out of the ground. So that question just seems to never go away. And so Mr. Peters has a question about that. And like most farmers, he has a whole bunch of old trucks and engines and stuff on the farm that are still good and are being used. And we will discuss that at the end of the show today. So without any further ado, we will get started. You know, the term, let me give you a little bit of background, is that when it comes to any engine, gasoline or diesel, the term cold start is often misunderstood by the public, and you being the public, meaning the consumer of that engine, that vehicle, that machine, what have you. And somebody may say to me, well, I live in Florida, it's 95 degrees and muggy, that's not a cold start. Well, yes it is, because by definition, in the industry, a cold start is any time an engine is started, all right, engine is started when it is below operating temperature. So that is the definition of a cold start. So even though, so if you went out to the shed and you had your tractor sitting in there and you are farming in the desert of Arizona, right? You have irrigation, you're farming in the desert of Arizona, and it's 102 degrees outside and it's maybe 108 in that shed, then you go to start that engine, that is considered a cold start. Now, granted, there are different levels of cold start. So now if you're up in Montana and it's 20 degrees below zero Fahrenheit, and you go to start that engine, that is considered a cold start also. And then, so there is, based upon the ambient temperature, we're going to have different degrees of cold start, but it all falls under the guise of cold starting an engine, which means its initial start after a long rest period that allowed all of the operational heat to be dissipated and ambient temperature to be achieved, or the engine to find parity with ambient temperature. So there are a lot of ambiguity in between that, but that is what we mean by when the industry says cold starting an engine. So now there are other stages of engine starting. And it's like I said, again, I'll repeat, this is for gasoline or diesel, but even though our discussion today is going to be on diesel engine cold start, but this precursor, this build up to it is going to cover both gasoline and diesel engines. And well, so I should really say compression ignition and spark ignition, because you could have a gasoline engine that's running off of natural gas or propane. So that's a spark ignition engine versus a compression ignition engine, where you could have a diesel that's running off of a slightly different fuel. All right, but we'll stick with the term diesel because that's what you're going to have on the farm. So we have cold start, and then the industry also identifies what is called a intermediate temperature startup. So the intermediate temperature startup is something that is not a full-blown cold start. Cold start meaning that the engine, and I'm repeating it, so it's for clarity for you, is that the engine is at ambient temperature or near ambient temperature, and then you have an intermediate range, which is a restart, because it already ran, it had some temperature in it, and it's not at ambient and it's not at full operating temperature. So let's say arguably you jump in your pickup truck and you start it up, and it's a nominal day, it's 70 degrees, and you go a half a mile to the barn, right? And you shut the engine off, and then you go get something out of the barn or the shed, and then you can go back in and start the truck. Maybe in that half a mile, because it was 70 degrees outside, the coolant temperature ended up reaching 110 degrees or 120 degrees, 130 degrees, whatever number you want to identify it as. So it's not a full-blown cold start. It's not an ambient, but the engine is designed to run at 210 or 220, so it is not at full operating temperature or within that window that they would consider operating temperature, even if it's on the lower side of that, maybe 190 or 200 degrees. So that is called an intermediate starting temperature, or intermediate temperature start is probably a more concise way of me to say that to you. And then we have a hot restart. So a hot restart is when the engine was at operating temperature. It makes no difference if it was for 5 minutes or 5 hours. It was at operating temperature. The engine was shut off, and it was restarted shortly thereafter. And during a hot restart, a phenomena happens that is called heat soak. And whenever you shut off an engine, regardless of its application, whenever you shut off an engine, the cooling system no longer functions, but there is the combustion heat inside the engine, and there is the heat in the block itself, the cylinder head, all of the castings absorb the heat because it's like a sponge, so it soaks it in. And believe it or not, the temperature actually elevates in a lot of those components. And it elevates because the cooling system is no longer functioning, the engine is not pumping air in and out, and in almost every application, unless you're like me and you pop the hood open, all right, or open up the engine bay if it's like on a combine or what have you, some people call it the bonnet, whatever it is, to let that heat out, because heat rises, is that you're going to have what's called a thermal excursion, that the temperature is going to elevate even though the engine is shut off, and that is what is called a heat soak. And then at one particular point, it's going to reach that, it's going to stabilize, and then it's going to start to slowly cool down. And as I said, the reason for that excursion, that thermal excursion to rise, the spike in temperature, is because the engine has residual heat in it and the cooling system is no longer functioning. And I did a show a while back on that, about understanding heat soak and its importance. So if you so when you restart an engine, when you restart an engine that has undergone heat soak or reached its peak and started to just cool down slightly from heat soak, then that is called a hot restart. So to recap before we move on, you have a cold start, which is the initial start. And that means that the engine is more or less at ambient temperature, whatever that ambient temperature happens to be. And then you have a intermediate restart. You have a normal operating temperature restart, which would be considered a hot restart. And depending upon how long that engine sat there, let's say you're running to, let's say you're delivering grain to the grain elevator, and you stop in town and you run in to get a cup of coffee and you shut the truck off, all right, and you were in 5 minutes to get a cup of coffee, and then what happens is that is a heat soak hot restart. If you were in the convenience store, gas station, whatever, for 20 minutes, then you would actually be slightly below operating temperature, which is still a hot restart. All right, so it gets to be a little bit confusing, but if you just look at it that way, and the reason why I'm telling you this is that eventually we will do a show on hot restarting. All right, and there's a lot of dynamics that come into play, and there's a whole, I don't want to say it's an engineering discipline, but what happens is there is a whole engineering component that is called hot fuel handling. Because the dynamics of fuel, specifically gasoline, not so much diesel, but diesel also, the dynamics of the fuel and what needs to happen to restart the engine under a heat soak condition is completely different than it would be in a cold start or an intermediate range. And also the petroleum companies, the oil companies, are very concerned with the, especially with gasoline. You know, and that's one of the things that came up with the E15 restrictions that President Trump now took away, thankfully, is that the way the fuel responds and acts when it is superheated, meaning it's heated way above its normal temperature when it's fueling the engine. So that is a whole area of study and concern that we as farmers are not going to get involved with today. So you don't have to worry about that, but we're going to be worrying about cold starting a diesel engine. So now a diesel, as we know, and I said a few minutes back, is considered a compression ignition engine. So let's go into diesel 101. And I know that this is going to be a review for all of you. It's going to be brief. I'm not going to ramble on for 2 hours about it. All right, it's going to be brief, but for some of you it may be a refresher that you need to have, and for others it may be something that you never really thought of. Now, it is called a compression ignition engine because it does not use any spark plug, whereas a spark ignition engine uses a spark plug. The arcing of the spark plug in a gasoline engine, spark ignition is what starts the combustion event. In a diesel engine, it is compression ignition. And where a lot of people get confused is they think that the fuel is compressed from the piston going up the top dead center, that the fuel and air mixture is compressed so much that it ignites, that it explodes, that the ignition event starts. And that is not the case, all right? The way a compression ignition engine works, I don't care whether this is a 1950s two-stroke Detroit diesel or a 2020, whatever you like, all right? Cummins, Duramax, John Deere, whatever it may be, it makes no difference. The theory of operation, the theory of combustion in that engine is the same. Is that what happens in a diesel engine has a very high compression ratio. That's a mechanical compression ratio. And what that means, as I'm recapping, I'm reviewing this, it's the compression ratio is the change in volume of the cylinder at bottom dead center, with the piston at bottom dead center versus top dead center. So it's the change in volume. So when the piston is at bottom dead center, as the piston goes down on its stroke, on its intake stroke, All right, it creates a low pressure region and the atmospheric pressure pushes air into the cylinder. On a diesel engine, it is just air at that particular point. On a gasoline engine, it would be air and fuel. So the diesel engine now sucks air in, all right, sucks air in, and it's actually a combination of push and pull because the atmospheric pressure is higher than the low pressure region as the piston sweeps towards top dead, towards bottom dead center, and the cylinder, now the piston is at bottom dead center, the bottom of the cylinder bore, and the cylinder is filled with air. Now the compression stroke starts, and the piston is pushed up towards top dead center. So we're taking the volume of air that was in the piston, in the cylinder, excuse me, from it being at bottom dead center, and we're compressing it into a much smaller region. So when you say that, or you read that an engine has a 20-to-1 compression ratio, that means that the volume at bottom dead center is 20 times greater in that cylinder than the volume at top dead center. All right, so it's taking 20 units and pushing it into one. And what is happening is that as it is pushing that air into a tighter position, the molecules are being squeezed together. There's going to be friction involved, and it is going to heat that air. So a diesel, because it is compression ignition, is using the compression, the extremely high change in volume from bottom dead center to top dead center, to push the air molecules together and to heat them. All right, so to heat them, then what will happen is at one particular point in the piston stroke, just as it's coming near top dead center, then this is regardless if it's a mechanical diesel or electronic diesel, we're talking about the compression of the air, is that it will spray the diesel fuel onto the compressed air. So to recap once more, is that people think that diesel fuel is compressed, the diesel fuel and air mixture is compressed so greatly that it explodes, or a layperson's term, explodes at the ignition event starts. That is not the case. It is the compression stroke is used to heat the air to a point that will allow combustion to begin. Auto combustion to begin, auto meaning without a spark. So the diesel fuel is sprayed into this heated air, and hopefully it ignites. And when it ignites, then the engine will start and run. All right, now there's a couple of components here that we need to understand about diesel fuel. And there's what is called a flash point, and is a low ignition temperature point. Now the flash point, and nobody really talks about this, so this is like FYI, you don't have to worry about the flash point of, but the flash point of diesel fuel or flash point of a fuel is the lowest temperature to form an ignitable mixture. So that is, so if you say gasoline has a flash point, you could look certain chemicals on the farm, you may be using a herbicide or something, and it says it has a certain flash point. So that is the lowest temperature to form an ignitable mixture, because for combustion on anything, you need some sort of fuel. You need an accelerant, you need a fuel, all right, be it the diesel fuel, be it some other chemical, and you need to have oxygen for a combustible event to occur. Now, the other component of diesel fuel is the low ignition temperature, the low auto ignition temperature. And that is the temperature that is required for a flame to be created. All right, so we have flash point, and diesel fuel is designed, we'll say, or chemically created, or that's not the word I'm looking for, but not created, but manufactured to have a higher flash point. And if you think of we thank God we haven't heard of it recently. But the fact of the matter is that about a year or two back in the news, when they were I believe it was the Bakken Ridge and the Canadian tar sands oil, but it was probably more from the Bakken Ridge in North Dakota, is that there was the oil trains and a number of them caught fire, and sadly there was a lot of damage from that and maybe even some deaths that I don't honestly recall, which I'm disappointed in. But the fact of the matter is, you say to yourself, well, it's crude oil, how did it ignite like that? Well, basically, that particular crude oil has a very, very low flash point, so it didn't take much for it to ignite and start to burn. Or you may have other crude like West Texas Intermediate or Saudi Arabian Sweet that has a higher flash point. And I'm just throwing those names around. I'm not going to get mired in looking up the flash point for each type of crude oil there is, but nor you would want me to. But the thing is that so diesel fuel is chemically designed to have a higher flash point, because otherwise it would be a fire hazard if it would ignite on too low a temperature. So let's say, arguably, to be ridiculous, let's say it ignited at 90 degrees. All right, you put it into the back of your truck in a 5-gallon can, and it sits out in the sun, and it's 120 degrees in the back of the truck, the thing would burn and catch fire. So remember that when diesel fuel is refined and created, it is refined and created to have a high enough flash point that it is not a safety hazard, that it ignites just based upon temperature alone. And then there is the low auto ignition temperature, and what that basically is, as I said, is the temperature that is required, the minimum temperature that is required for a flame in the cylinder to begin. Now, the thing is that let's start to assign some numbers to it. And these are going to be general numbers so that you could understand the theory of operation, and based upon, and the caveat that I'm going to attach to it, based upon the engine design and the placement of the injector, the combustion chamber design, the material that the engine is made from, is it an aluminum cylinder head, is it an aluminum block, what have you, so it's going to vary. But these are good to go numbers, just like you'd say you need so much basic N, P, and K to grow, to raise a corn crop. All right, so these are good numbers. And then basically, when you go to crank a diesel engine over, that high compression ratio between 16 to 1 and 22 to 1, depending upon the engine design, and I will hopefully remember to discuss that in a minute, will create a temperature of around 482 degrees. Now, what's going to happen is that you need a temperature of around 482 degrees for the engine, for the diesel fuel to ignite. So anything below 482 degrees, the diesel fuel is not going to ignite. So if we stop there and we turn back the clock many, many years to when diesels were first coming on board on the farm, and there was a lot of use of diesel engines on the farm, is that we used to use it. We had a can of ether, which looked like a little refrigerant can, right? A can of ether, and we would have a button on the dashboard of the tractor, and we would spray some ether into the engine to start it, and it would knock like hell, and it was not really healthy for the engine. All right, but those engines started on ether. They did not have glow plugs. So what would happen is that now keep in mind that the fuel wants approximately 482 degrees temperature. It needs to be sprayed into air that is 482 degrees. So let's say 500 degrees for easy arithmetic, for this fuel to ignite. On a 100 degree day, using easy numbers, the air that we're already putting into that cylinder is 100 degrees. So the compression of the molecules would only have to raise that air temperature 382 degrees, right? Because we want 482. So if we're starting with 100 degree air, we already got 100 degrees there. The 20 to 1 compression ratio only needs to raise that air 382 degrees to get to the flash, to the ignition point, not flash point, of the diesel fuel. So now if it is 0 degrees outside, then we have to raise that temperature from 0 all the way to 482 degrees, and that is simply going to be done by the engine cranking and the piston compressing the air, compressing the air, compressing the air. All right, so that really, on a 100-degree day out in the desert, it was pretty easy to mechanically increase the air temperature through the compression, through the action of the piston, with a high mechanical compression ratio, meaning the difference in volume with the piston at bottom dead center and then at top dead center, by squeezing the molecules together. It was not so easy to do that at on a 0-degree Fahrenheit day. All right, so what was instituted was adding what they called a starting fluid, which was an ether that had a much lower temperature ignition point than diesel fuel. So the engine would start on the ether, which is much easier for it to ignite. The ether had a different chemical composition. That's why the engine knocked. It was almost severe detonation, like a severe ping in the gasoline engine, but many times worse. And then what would happen is the engine ran for a second or two, would be injecting fuel, is that enough heat from the combustion of the ether in the fuel would start to mix with the diesel fuel, and it would start to burn, and then you would get the temperature up to inside the cylinder to around 1300 degrees. So the air temperature would be 1300 degrees when the engine was running, and now we sprayed our diesel fuel in through our injection system. The air was compressed to 1300 degrees, and the fuel would ignite, and the engine ran nice and smooth, and we went and you did your work for the day. It was beautiful. Everything was fine. On a hot restart, you had hot air in the cylinder, so the diesel engine started very easily, did not require ether, a starting aid, is a different chemical composition fuel that would ignite at a lower temperature. Then that was very hard on the engine. And then if you didn't use the ether, you'd have to crank until you got the air to the temperature enough that it would allow auto combustion of the fuel to begin. Now, let's stop there for a second, because what's going to happen is that there is something called thermal inertia, and that is where in basic life we experience thermal inertia, is that, and I've discussed this in a show before, is that where hot is going to go to cold. All right, so you're going to, the heat is going to move to from hot to cold. So if you have a very, not only cold air, but if you have a very cold engine block, because it's 0 degrees outside, a cold piston, cold cylinder head, cold intake manifold, then even though you're cranking the engine, because you're not using any ether to start it, you're cranking the engine, is that it's going to make some heat from the compression of the molecules, all right? But that heat is going to be rejected from that air, and it's going to be sucked in like a sponge into that cold cylinder wall, that cold cylinder head, what have you. So it's going to be very hard on an extremely cold day for this, for the compression of the molecules alone to create enough heat to bring the air temperature in the cylinder to 482 degrees, so when the fuel is sprayed in, that it will ignite. And that is why the starting fluid came about. And now the next step was, is that the starting fluid was done away with, and glow plugs were instituted in the engine. Now, depending upon whether it's a direct injection engine or a indirect injection engine, quick overview, a direct injection engine has the fuel and the glow plug right in what is considered the combustion chamber of the diesel engine in the cylinder head, whereas a indirect injection engine had a little pocket in the casting of the cylinder head that had the glow plug in there. And so it was a little side pocket, like a little pocket you'd have in your pocket within a pocket. You know, older pants had that. They had a pocket. They had a little pocket in there, older work pants. All right, and where you would have the glow plug reside. And the reason for that being is that there was less surface-to-volume ratio, right? The surface was smaller, so there was less thermal inertia from the heated air as the piston pumped the air, and it would allow the engine to start, and then that flame would come from there. All right, so once the combustion event started, so it would start in the small pre-chamber, and then it would travel out into the larger chamber. But the problem with a pre-chamber type of diesel, which is indirect injection, is that it was very hard to get a good combustion chamber design because the event was actually starting in the smaller room and going to the larger room. So a lot of dynamics in combustion chamber design that have made the modern diesel so quiet, so smooth, and so efficient could not be achieved with the pre-chamber. And also emission-wise, they were dirtier, but that's another show. So what has basically happened is that it was realized that if we would install something called a glow plug, and glow plug in each cylinder, that we could use this to help start the engine when it is cold. So a cold start, right? Remember, ambient temperature, whatever it may be. Now, another misconception that people think is that the glow plug is actually heating the air in the cylinder, all right, or the pre-chamber if it's a indirect injection diesel. That is not the case. The glow plug is acting almost like a spark plug without a spark. What it's basically doing is it's like a toaster grid, like a toaster that you have in your house to bake toast. What it's electric grid that's covered by a metal tube, and it's the electricity, it's high amperage, could be as much as 100 amps, goes through there, generates heat, and then the tip of the glow plug, the shell, what is called the shell of the glow plug, has heat transfer from the heating element to that, and then when it's up to temperature, most glow plugs will actually reach, the tip will actually reach about 1900 degrees. So what is happening is that it is not heating the air in the cylinder, it's giving a very hot spot, an ignition point for the fuel to ignite. So the dynamics of compressing the air molecules on the piston as it goes towards top dead center is still the same. We still need the 482 degrees for, let's say, 500 freezerific for the diesel fuel to ignite. And now what's happening is the piston, as it comes up to top dead center and the fuel is ignited a few degrees before top dead center, you may only have 250 degree air, all right, Fahrenheit, 250 degree air, but then the glow plug is there and some of the fuel touches, the fuel and air mixture touches the 1900 degree tip of the glow plug and ignites and starts combustion. And that is the purpose for the glow plug. So it is not heating the air, it's giving it a hot element, a hot spot for that fuel to ignite. And the reason why the engine runs rough or runs poorly and smokes and knocks as for a few seconds after it starts, because it basically started right at the glow plug, the ignition event started there, the flame tried to propagate, which means travel across the bore, tried to propagate across the bore, and then it reached a temperature that was below the ignition point or just at the ignition point of 482 degrees, and the flame would spitter and sputter and go out. And that is what is called a reaction zone. It's where the temperature from the heated air, from the temperature from the combustible flame in the cylinder travels into the non-burned region and transfers the heat. And that's why it usually takes a 2 or 3 or 4 seconds for the engine to start to smooth out and not smoke on an older diesel, all right, or one with just glow plugs, because of that reaction zone. So to bring this full circle is that the dynamics of the air pumping and compressing the molecules stays the same, but it may not be able to get it to the 482 degrees or 482 degrees uniformly throughout the cylinder for that injector to introduce the fuel for it to ignite. The glow plug is like a glowing element. It's like a glowing element, like that starts a forest fire, right? Like the hot ashes from a campfire ends up starting a forest fire. It glows at about 1900 degrees, or reaches about 1900 degrees. That is the initial ignition point for the fuel. The flame now starts to travel and needs to, if the heat needs to move from the burned to the unburned air, and then once that reaches normal temperature, which would be about 1300 degrees inside the cylinder, the engine runs smoothly and runs fine, right? So that is the purpose of the glow plug. Now, some other engines today use an intake air heater in lieu of a glow plug. And a lot of smaller engines, smaller meaning not in a big combine or big wheel loader or a big 600 horsepower tractor, they may use an intake air heater, which is basically the same theory as a glow plug, but it is truly starting to raise the temperature of the air. So it's almost like a toaster that in its place someplace in the intake track, and it is going to raise the temperature of the air as going to be thermal transfer like there is across the radiator. As the air is entering the cylinder, it's going to go through this heating element, then it may raise it 100, 110 degrees, and then the normal compression of the piston is going to raise it to the point of combustion, which is around 482 degrees. So if you have 0 degree air and the natural dynamic of it compressing, it may raise it to 200 and 250, whatever it may be, and then the intake air temperature heater raises it another 150 degrees, 200 degrees, then all of a sudden we have a ignition event and the engine runs. Once the engine runs, even if it's going to start on one cylinder, obviously, once it runs, then it all starts to go and we have the flame in the cylinder, then you're going to have that reaction zone begin and the engine is going to start, it's going to keep running and run smoothly and run fine. All right, so that is how a diesel engine cold starts. And again, repeating, cold start meaning that it's a start at ambient temperature. And then once you have some heat in the cylinder, the average air temperature during to initiate combustion is around 1300 degrees. That doesn't mean that the coolant temperature is 1300 degrees. Obviously, the air temperature inside from the combustion event. And now, what you will see on older engines or non-emission control engines, they don't have to be 50 years old. What will happen, like on my New Holland tractor, I turn the key and into a certain position, and the light comes on on the dashboard, the glow plug, and I'm heating the glow plugs. My tractor does not have a timer. I know that on a cold start in the summertime, I need to hold the glow plugs on for about 9 to 10 seconds, and as the temperature gets colder outside, the ambient temperature, so the cold start temperature is lower, I need to hold it on for about 28 to 30 seconds. So for instance, if I go out today and it's 60 degrees, then I'll go and I'll turn the key on, put it into the position for the glow plug light to be on, and then what I will do is I will count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and up to 10 or 12 seconds, and she should start right up. Now, and then if it's the middle of winter and I'm going to plow snow and it's 0 degrees or 10 degrees outside, I'll count to 28 or 30 and then I'll crank the engine. So, and then it'll start very quickly. So now the thing basically is that you will find that that's older type of technology, non-emission control technology. On newer engines, Tier 4 engines, whatever it may be, I'm saying that it could be TF4A, TF4B, TF4 final, and depending upon the emission output of that particular engine, what you will find is that most newer engines use both an intake air heater and glow plugs to start the engine. They call a quick start diesel. So when you get into these, and I'm going to use the pickup trucks because they have the most emission, that the highest level of fuel management and combustion management versus, let's say, a combine or a big farm tractor or a sprayer or a semi, right? So they have the highest level of that simply because the emission standards are the most stringent, the tightest for that. So what they will do is they call quick start diesels, and you go in and you see how quickly they start, right? Well, what basically happens is that they use an intake air heater and a glow plug in most applications. I know some Cummins don't use that, but in most applications they use an intake air heater and glow plug, and it has a calculation. So when you turn the key on, it looks at the coolant temperature, it looks at the ambient air temperature. It's able to determine whether it's a full-blown cold start, whether it's an intermediate start or a hot restart, and it, based upon that coolant temperature and intake air temperature, and some of them also have an ambient air temperature sensor, which adds more degrees of freedom, more tunability, is that it will decide whether it has evokes the glow plugs, the intake air heater, one or the other, or both. And then, whereas with my farm tractor, I'll put the glow plugs on with the key position. As soon as I go into crank, those glow plugs are no longer being powered up. They're cooling off. They're no longer being powered up. And then when the engine starts, there's no glow plugs. There's no glow plug action. There's no heating action in the chamber during crank and run. But on these newer diesels, what they're basically doing is that they are keeping one or the other, or possibly both, on for a few seconds, or let's put it, because I don't know what the exact calibration is based upon that engine and the ambient temperature, but it's keeping those evoked, either the glow plug and the intake air heater, or both, or one or the other, all right, for the first, while the engine is first started. And the reason for that being is that reaction zone that I discussed, it doesn't want it to have a, not only for customer satisfaction, that's why you're wondering why you could start your diesel pickup truck in 10 degree below zero weather and it sits there after 1 second, it idles beautifully and doesn't have that rough rolling and surging and what have you and smoking, all right, because it's keeping that artificial heating element on until the engine stabilizes as far as its running is concerned. And because during that time, when that engine is not burning that fuel, before the reaction zone starts, the particulate emissions, and what, basically, I shouldn't say the particulates, because there has to be some level of combustion, possibly, but the hydrocarbon emissions and everything goes very high because you're not combusting that fuel along with the carbon monoxide. So if you're wondering why your new diesel starts and runs so cleanly and so smoothly, regardless of the temperature, that is because it is keeping the glow plugs and intake air heater, or both, evoked for a certain time period on a cold restart until some temperature is normalized. So that is something that, so in case you're wondering, that's, you got the answer now. But anyway, the thing what you need to do as far as some diagnostics is concerned is that if you have an engine, a diesel engine, that is starting to get a little, you have to know your equipment. And so if you're saying to yourself, well, you know, this thing used to start, it's not really cold out, it's 50 degrees, 60 degrees, it used to start a little bit quicker than it is now, right, there's a number of things that could be happening. Number one, the glow plugs themselves do wear out. They do wear out, and as they wear out, they usually are lower in operating temperature, or so it's not reaching the 1900 degrees, or you may have a glow plug that's really only reaching a 500 degrees or 400 degrees in one cylinder. So you need to identify or think about the condition of the glow plugs. They are not meant to last the entire life of the engine, all right? They do with each thermal cycle, each startup cycle, they get degraded slightly, albeit very slightly. They may last 10, 15, 20 years, depending upon how often the engine is cold started, but that is something to come into play. Where I go to get feed for my chickens and my animals is at Penwell Mills over in Port Murray, New Jersey, and Phil Rorick owns it, and he had a GMC Zuzu box truck with a turbo diesel in it, and he can never get that thing to start when it got 40 degrees or below. He had to plug in the block heater, and now the block heater only helped him because you were having less thermal inertia by keeping the coolant high, because the water in the cylinder head in the block was circulating. So when it got cold outside, you had less thermal inertia, less of a sponge pulling the heat out of that compression stroke air as it's pushing the molecules together. And this thing was a bad start. And I said to him, Phil, that I think you got bad glow plugs, burned out glow plugs. All right, and they're not reaching the temperature. So he had his nephew check them out, and you could check the resistance of the glow plugs. All right, check them out, and the glow plugs were basically, it was starting on what I'm saying, a half a glow plug. All right, meaning by a half, meaning that it wasn't that the others were basically doing nothing, and it was starting on one cylinder, and instead of that reaching the approximate 1900 degrees, that may have only been reaching 1000 degrees. That's what I'm saying, a half a glow plug. Once he put those glow plugs in there, that engine starts fine, and he doesn't have to run put the block heater in or what have you, because it has that hot spot, that ignition point. So keep that in mind. The other thing that you need to identify is, remember that when you're heating that glow plug, they'll take a lot of amps. Some of them take 100 amps to run the whole grid of how many glow plugs there may be in the cylinder, in the engine. And then the condition of the battery in that particular piece of equipment or that truck is going to be paramount to that. All right, it may crank fine, but you need to load. I had that happen. My battery, I was looking to replace my battery this winter in my tractor, and just before the day before harvest started, we used the tractor to move the corn out of the field. I went to go start it the week before, it was fine, and I was going to replace it for the fall. If you get through harvest, I don't need to bother with this now. And what happened was that I went to go start it, click, right, the battery died. So went and put a New Holland battery in it, and now the telltale sign, which I should have perceived, but I didn't load test the battery because I'm just as bad as everybody else. You're planting crop, you have a crazy season like this year, you say, no, that's good, and you're trying to get in the field and plant this. I busted the sprayer, the typical things that happen on the farm. So I should have load tested that battery, all right, anyway, but the thing was starting fine. But since I did my count, I knew that on a warmer day, it was taking longer for me to start it, to have the glow plugs evoked, and then it normally would. So instead of my 10 seconds, it was taking 15 seconds or so, and instead of starting and running relatively clean before the reaction zone started for a second or two, it was running poorly for about 5 or 10 seconds, and then ran smoothly, and the hot restart, everything was fine. I had enough residual heat, I didn't require the glow plugs. So the thing is that as soon as I put the new battery in, I now noticed that I am starting quicker, simply because I'm probably cranking a little bit quicker, even though I did not qualify that. But I'm heating the glow plugs better because the battery is in a better condition, so I'm reaching the optimum temperature. So keep that in mind, that if you are having a diesel engine that is starting to be a little bit more ornery to start, then the fact of the matter is, before you go to the glow plugs, load test that battery and look at those connections. And then also, the glow plugs go through a relay, so make sure that that relay is sending the right amount of voltage and amperage to those glow plugs, that the relay connections aren't corroded. All right. And then the other thing, keep in mind that as an engine does get older and has a lot of hours on it or has a lot of miles on it, that the ring seal will not be as good as it is when it's new. So what will happen is that, so instead of reaching the 482 degrees Fahrenheit, 500 degrees, whatever you want to say, during the compression stroke, it's going to not heat the air as much, and then the engine is going to rely more on the glow plugs or the intake air heater to get it to start. So the thing basically is, now the same thing would happen with an intake air heater, that heating element, that grid could start to become inefficient and not heat the air as much as possible. Those are application specific diagnostic procedures, but I wanted to explain to you how a diesel engine cold starts, and cold start once again for the millionth time in the show, meaning at ambient temperature. And the warmer the ambient temperature it is, the easier for it to achieve the almost 500 degrees air temperature for the fuel to ignite. And then the colder the temperature it is, the harder it will be, and will rely more on an aid to have it start. Now, the thing is that one other thing comes into play before we go to special delivery that I want to discuss, and quickly, pre-chamber, indirect diesel and direct injection diesel. On a indirect injection diesel, they will have a higher mechanical compression ratio, as I mentioned briefly before, because it is going to have a larger surface area to lose heat because of that pre-chamber than a direct injection diesel. So an indirect injection diesel will usually have a mechanical compression ratio of around 20-1, and then an indirect injection diesel will have a mechanical compression ratio of about 15-16, 17-1. So the 17-1 or the 16-1 without the pre-chamber is equivalent to a 20 or 21 or 22-1 with a pre-chamber, because it is a loss. It is a loss that is happening because of the larger surface area, allowing more thermal inertia, more heat to be pulled out of that compressed air. Now, the other thing to keep in mind before I go to special delivery is the cetane of the fuel. Cetane is the opposite of octane. Octane is the fuel's ability to resist on gasoline combustion through pressure and heat, whereas cetane is the fuel's eagerness to ignite. So if you have a low cetane fuel, and you have a degraded old fuel in that piece of equipment, you had fuel in the tank, and it's specifically a low cetane fuel. And why is it low cetane fuel? Could be for a number of reasons. It has a lot of moisture in it, what have you. Maybe it was made as a low cetane fuel. That 482 degrees, the 500 degree ignition point that I was talking about, may not hold true anymore. So it may now be 600 degrees, which is going to make that engine harder to start and more reliant upon those glow plugs. And even with the glow plug or intake air heater, it's going to be harder to start. That is why if you use a cetane improver in your diesel fuel, and the higher the cetane, the easier the engine will start. And it'll say in the bottle, improves cold starts. Has nothing to do with the fuel gelling or what have you. It's the ignitability of the fuel. So you may take that, it'll be closer to that 482 degrees, or maybe actually 476 degrees or 450 degrees versus 482 if you have a higher cetane fuel. So keep in mind, and I preach this like a soapbox preacher on the corner, is that, you know, a high cetane properly atomized fuel will make that engine easier to start and quicker to start, specifically in the cold weather. And also, if the injectors are clean and they're atomizing and breaking that fuel up better during crank, so there's a nice homogeneous mixture of air and fuel pushing towards that glow plug, then it's going to be easier to start. If you have an injector that's not breaking up the fuel properly and have a nice conical spray pattern and spraying all the way to one side, it is going to be harder to start. Alrighty, so if you have any questions, as I always say, please feel free to contact me at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. And as we close, we're going to go into special delivery. And as I always say to you and said earlier in the show, I am very proud that special delivery is brought to you by Firestone Ag, a company that is founded by Harvey Firestone, a fourth generation farmer from Columbiana, Ohio. And you know, and Harvey's mindset is still deeply rooted in Firestone Ag today, and is seen by their 23 degree tread bar industry standard that came out a number of years ago, the AD2 technology, the new Evo tire, and the Firestone of replacement tracks. And I tell you this every week because I want to drill it into your head. The soil is the lifeblood of your farm. Trust it only to Firestone. So now, Mr. Joe Peters writes that he, as I said before, I'll paraphrase so I could bring the show in on time, and he's concerned with using modern oils without a additive called ZDDP, which people call zinc. It's actually zinc. It's like 57 different letters. All right, so people just call it a zinc additive, and in older engines, because modern oil does not have ZDDP in it, because it affects or degrades the catalytic converter on a gasoline engine. So to answer his question concisely is that if you have an older engine and it ran for many years, obviously, if it's older, right, it did. I'm saying that you didn't recently rebuild and change the camshaft. The ZDDP was the interface between the lifter and the lobe of the cam, and it was a lubricant that was required to take the pressure of the lifter with the valve spring open, so it's pushing down onto that cam lobe. And what the industry has found is that a older engine with standard factory setting of valve spring pressure and with a camshaft and lifter that is broken in and mated, is that there is a very, very minute possibility of damaging the cam, which you would flat spot the cam, take the lobe off it, by using a non-ZDDP oil, and modern oil in an old engine. The likelihood of that is very, very minimal. Where this came from, so basically, let me make sure I make this clear to you. In essence, it is safe to use a older style, a newer style chemistry oil without zinc in it in an older engine, as long as it has the original camshaft and lifters in it and they've mated together. Where this, I don't want to say myth, because it's not a myth, it's true, where it came from was the hot rod and performance industry, where people would take an older engine, they would change the camshaft, the metallurgy was different, and the valve spring pressure was greatly higher. So, for instance, you take an old Chevy or Ford engine that probably had 70 pounds of pressure on the valve spring, 60 to 70 pounds on the seat with the valve closed, so the spring wasn't compressed, whereas a normal, even mild performance camshaft has about 110 to 120 pounds, almost double the pressure, plus the metallurgy is a little bit different. So to answer your question, sir, if you want to add a ZDDP oil additive, which is inexpensive, you could buy it in a bottle and put it in with your oil change with your older engines on the farm, you are not hurting anything at all. You are not hurting anything. If the engine is going to be rebuilt, then you need to ask your engine builder whether he put a camshaft and lifter in it. Even though it's not a hot rod engine, camshaft and lifter that will require zinc, then you can add that to a modern oil. And if you do not, if the engine is older and you are been using it for years and you have a modern oil in it, I would not be concerned whatsoever about impacting the lobe or wearing out or flat spotting the lobe on that camshaft. So listen, I want to thank you so much for listening. As always, I am nothing without you. I am honored by everyone who listens, and I want you to always know, as I close and say, that the Hot Rod Farmer is pulling for you, the American farmer and rancher, and my beloved America. You have a blessed, blessed week, and hopefully you tune in next week. Thanks.